جایا رادھا مدھاوا جایا کنجا بیہاری ہے گوپی جنبالا بھا جایا گری بھردھاری ہے گوپی جن بھالا بھا جایا گری بھردھاری جایا گوپی جن بھالا بھا جایا گری بھردھاری ہے آشور نندن برج جن رنجنا 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 یمنا تیرا بن چاری یمنا تیرا بن چاری یمنا تیرا بن چاری یمنا تیرا بن چاری او جایا رادھا مادھوا جایا کنجا بیہاری ہے جایا رادھا مادھوا جایا کنجا بیہاری گوپی جن بھالا با جایا گری برداری گوپی جن بھالا بھا گری بھر جاری گوپی جن بھالا بھا جایا گری بھر جاری آشور نندن برج جن رنجنا آشور نندن برج جن رنجنا ಅಸುರನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಾಶೋರನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಾಶೋರನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಮುನಾ ತೀರ ಮನಚಾರಿ ಯಮುನಾ ತೀರ ಮನಚಾರಿ ಯಮುನಾ ತೀರ ಮನಚಾರಿ ಯಮುನಾ ತೀರ ಮನಚಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧಾ ಮಾಧವ ಜಯ ಕುಂಜ ವಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧಾ ಮಾಧವ ಜಯ ಕುಂಜ ವಿಹಾರಿ গোপী জন ভাল গিরিবর জারি ও অসুর নন্দন ব্রজ জন রাঙ্গনা অসুর নন্দন ব্রজ জন রাঙ্গনা ಯಶೋರ ನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಶೋರ ನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಶೋರ ನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಮುನಾ ತೀರ ವನಚಾರಿ ವನಚಾರಿ ಯಮುನ ತೀರ ವನಚಾರಿ ಯಮುನ ತೀರ ವನಚಾರಿ ಹರೆ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರೆ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೆ 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 ರಾಮ ಹರೆ ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೆ 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 ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರೆ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೆ 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 ರಾಮ ಹರೆ ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೆ 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 ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರೆ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೆ 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 ರಾಮ ಹರೆ ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೆ ಹರೆ
ಹರೆ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರೆ ಕೃಷ್ಣ
Radha Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Ram, Hare Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hey, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hari bol, hari bol, hari 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 bol. Hari bol, hari bol, hari 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 bol. Hari bol, hari bol, hari 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 bol. Hari bol, hari bol, hari bol, Nitya Gaura hari bol. Nitya Gaura hari bol, hari bol, hari bol, Nitya Gaura hari hari bol. Jaya Radha Gopinatha Radha Gopinatha Radha Gopinatha Radhe Radhe Jaya Radha Gopinatha Radha Gopinatha Radha Gopinatha Radhe Radhe Hare Krishna So my respectful obeisances to all board ships and to Srila Radhanath Maharaj and to the other Swamijis and to all my God sister and God brother Prabhus and to all of the wonderful devotees that I've already met here while I've been in Shaubati. And to all of those who I haven't had the good fortune to meet, all glories to you and your service. Personally, I'm still basking in the afterglow of yesterday's wonderful celebration for the pleasure of their lordships, and you know, so deeply grateful to be here, to experience that even once in my lifetime. And I'm sure that you all who attended yesterday felt that, you know, similarly, and had wonderful dreams about their lordships. And today, there were those swans there yesterday? No, they were over on the side. Anyway, it's such a beautiful festival. This is just like Vrindavan, the essence of Vrindavan. So, Maharaj, you know, sometimes because older disciples of Srila Prabhupada, they're expected to have some qualification to speak in Krishna consciousness. You'll have to forgive me because I have serious handicap in that regard. I am not a very powerful speaker. But he gave a topic that for today's Sunday program that was actually speaking about Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, founder Acharya of ISKCON. And then I thought, well, sometimes I can try to speak on that. And then I asked him, do you have a topic in that regard? And he specifically mentioned the mercy of this great personality. So, practically speaking, everything that Srila Prabhupada embodied was his mercy. Kripa bindu dhiya karoya dashi chinabhekavati, you know. So, he's none different from the embodiment of a merciful personality. And, you know, as many disciples as there are, and as many grand disciples as there are, and as many of you who have entered into this, all of you could meditate on, how could I begin to define the mercy of such a personality? So according to our realization and our experience, we could try to speak on that topic. So there's no one way that I could define it. That's according to really how a person listens to the words of such a great personality, and then how one acts upon those words, how one embraces those words, how one honors those words, that they get some realization on the mercy of that person. There was one instance in 1969, in the Kartik season, that was right around November, that Srila Prabhupada stayed at the estate of John Lennon. He was a singer in the 60s, musical group, the Beatles, and most of the men were in every day in London trying to prepare for the opening of the temple in London and Bury Place. And so by the arrangement of Krishna, I was a good part of the day from around about 3 a.m. till 10 or 11 in the evening, somehow in Srila Prabhupada's service. And I remember one day I was overcome with the feeling of Prabhupada's mercy on me, just like you have experienced in service to your guru. Sometimes when you you give your heart and your mind and your senses over to the execution of your service, then you feel that mercy. So I was feeling like that. It just so happened I was putting up an arti tray. So I said, Srila Prabhupada, your mercy is so deep, so profound. And he said very matter-of-factly, he said to him, that you can keep yourself in a dark cave and close the door to the cave, and you never feel the benedicting rays of the spiritual master's mercy. But if through the hearing and chanting you open the door to that cave, then the mercy of the spiritual master, the benedicting rays, they just shine through and illuminate that dark cave. And he said, I'm spreading my benedicting rays equally to every one of you. But some of you are feeling them more because you're opening the door to the dark cave. So that's one way for us to always meditate that I want that thing. I want to experience the mercy of my spiritual master. And that it goes across, there's no designation that can keep us from that. All of us who have tasted some drops of that, then we hanker for more and more and more. The thirst becomes more intense. The desire for that becomes more intense. And if we try to hear nicely, Srila Prabhupada, once in defining himself in relationship to his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur Maharaj, that he said, I used to listen so nicely. At one occasion in Allahabad, he said, I only spoke with him 5 or 6 times, but he used to walk and talk with me so many things. So it isn't a matter necessarily of physical association, although no one can calculate the value of that. But at least we have evidence from Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, that he didn't have so much as is some of his godbrother sannyasis even. So that's one thing for us to meditate on, is that, you know, pray. How can we get the mercy of our Guru Maharaj? What will attract his mercy? So we can all pray like that as we're engaged in our devotional service. But, you know, in relation to Srila Prabhupada, there's just, we could sit and talk for 1 day or 2 days or 2 weeks or 2 months or practically speaking for the rest, for years, and never even touch a drop of the power of that whole concept of devouring the mercy that is given of the benedicting rays of this, the bona fide spiritual master. And there are many stories that each individual disciple can reflect upon. I'm always fascinated to meet some godbrothers or godsisters who had not so much association with Srila Prabhupada, but are so deep and rich in their devotion and dedication to following the instructions. That's always so enlivening to me, and I relish so much hearing stories. So just on that theme, I'd like to introduce my god sister, Vishakha Devi Dasi. And we met in 1970 in Bombay in Akash Ganga building. Srila Prabhupada was present at that time. And practically speaking, since I've met her, I've just hung on to her transcendental feet. She's got so many qualities. And what we'll do is maybe just bounce back and forth a little bit, and she can speak a little something, and maybe I can speak something. We can just maybe explore this concept of mercy and Srila Prabhupada Gita, Vishakha Devi.
Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale, Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane, Namaste Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Vacharane, Nirvase Sasanyavadi, Paskata Deshatarane, Om Aginata Mirandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksurin Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namah. So, yesterday after the program, this extraordinary program of the Pushpa Abhishek, the likes of which I have never experienced before in my life, we were thinking of words to describe it, and we could not think of the proper words. It has to really be experienced to describe the effect of the Pushpa Abhishek for Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. So afterwards, Radhanath Maharaj suggested for this topic discussion of Srila Prabhupada's mercy for the Sunday feast lecture. So I was reflecting that there is a wonderful pastime in the Srimad Bhagavatam that is relevant to this topic, and that is the pastime concerning Daksha and Shiva. That Daksha was holding a sacrifice, and all the exalted personalities in the universe were invited to participate in this sacrifice. Among them was Lord Shiva, who of course is well known by all, and he also happened to be the husband of Daksha's daughter, Sati. So thereby he was Daksha's son-in-law. So when Daksha entered this assembly, which was full of these exalted personalities from throughout the universe, all of them stood up out of respect for his exalted position, except for Lord Brahma, who is Daksha's father, and Lord Shiva. But in proper etiquette, as Daksha's son-in-law, Lord Shiva should have stood up, and Daksha took this as a great offense, that this person has not stood up, even though I am his superior. And thereby he proceeded to find all the faults in Lord Shiva. He listed them one after another after another. And this created a huge commotion in the assembly by the followers of Lord Shiva. And the effect was that Lord Shiva left, and afterwards, sometime later, Sati, Lord Shiva's wife and Daksha's daughter, went to his place. And Daksha ignored her, surprisingly enough, even though she was such a dear daughter. And Sati reflected on this, and what she said was that one can judge a person by the way that person looks upon others. That a person in the lower position, she was very bold, she was referring to her father, but she nonetheless she had this boldness because of her realization. She says, a person in the lower position, he will look at somebody with all good qualities. Lord Shiva is known as the best of the Vaishnavas. He is complete with all the Vaishnava qualities, decorated with the 26 ornaments of a Vaishnava. Compassionate, control of the mind, control of the senses, friendly to all. But a person like Daksha will look upon Lord Shiva and simply see, oh, he is covered with the ashes of the crematorium. Oh, he's associating with ghosts and hobgoblins. Oh, he is not properly respectful. A person in the middle position, that person will see the good and the bad. And the person in the higher position, he will look upon someone with practically no good qualities. Practically, they have nothing to commend them. But he will find something and magnify that, some good quality. Some minuscule thing. And he will see that and explore that and encourage that. And that is our Srila Prabhupada. That he came to the Western world where there is no culture. All malechas, all yavanas. Not only that, but he came to the worst part of the Western world, the Lower East Side of New York, where people do not even bathe properly. They keep long hairs. They follow no regulative principles. Every one of the regulative principles that we are asked to follow upon initiation, they systematically break. Not only do they break them, but they're proud of breaking them. They don't know it's wrong to break them. Absolutely no standard of civilization. It's animal life. So he came there and collected a few people, and in that abominable presence of those personalities, he found something to fan, to glorify, to encourage. That is our Srila Prabhupada. That a person of the highest rank, you can see by how he sees others. So he looked past the trash, which was so thick, and he saw something worthy of being glorified, and he fanned that spark. And from that, everything has come. From his exalted vision of seeing the finer points and expanding on those and encouraging those and, when necessary, correcting those, so much. We are all here. This enthusiasm that we feel at the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath, this is Prabhupada's mercy. It says, come, like that. Even there is a wonderful interview my husband Yadavara Prabhu did with one Sally Agarwal. Perhaps you have seen it. It's in the film Your Ever Well Wisher. So this Sally Agarwal is a middle-aged housewife, American housewife. Her only connection to India is that she has a husband who is of Indian origin, a Mr. Agarwal. And her father-in-law is a resident of Agra. So her father-in-law happened to meet Srila Prabhupada and said, oh yes, I will sponsor your trip to America. And because his son sponsored Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada appeared at her door in Butler, Pennsylvania, in the middle of the night one night. She explains this. And the relationship that he established with this Sally Agarwal was just extraordinary. He began to cook for her family. They relished prasadam together. And she mentions that she observed his austerity with such respect and veneration that he only brought with him a bag of cereal and some books and his umbrella. And yet he was the perfect guest because he was completely content. She didn't have to worry. Oh, I have to entertain him. Oh, he's dissatisfied. No, he could simply chant and be content. But even more than that, he was so loving and kind that he relished when her little son first stood up. He enjoyed that so much. He established a very warm, personal, genuine relationship with this middle-aged American housewife. This is our Srila Prabhupada, his mercy. It's not based so much on philosophy, but it's based on genuine personalism and caring for another individual. She mentioned that when he laughed, it was just oceanic. The whole universe seemed to laugh with him, and he laughed a lot. She said, I enjoyed my 1 month with that your Swamiji more than anything that I've enjoyed in my entire life. Who can imagine? This is Srila Prabhupada's extraordinary transcendental personality. So it's exhibited throughout our movement. It's exhibited in his books, in his tapes, in his devotees, in their patience, in their perseverance, in their tolerance, in trying to fulfill his desires. I had the good fortune that for 2 summers I was a photographer, so I traveled a little bit with Srila Prabhupada through America. And I remember on 2 occasions he was sitting on the Vyasa sign speaking, once in New York and again in Philadelphia. And in front of the assembled devotees he said, you are singing this song every day, Sri Guru Charana Padma Kevala Bhakati Sanna. But do you know the meaning? He was challenging us. He said this song is written in very simple Bengali language, but it is replete with deep meaning, profound meaning. So in that song, there's 2 lines. Ha ha Prabhu Kora Doya, Deho More Parachoya. So Doya means mercy. O Master, be merciful unto me. Ha ha Prabhu Kora Doya. Deho More Parachoya. Give me the shade of your lotus feet. So the shade of Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet, that is his mercy to us, and that means to serve him. We can please him through service. If we are not sure, we can ask others how to serve him. You're very fortunate here. You have Radhanath Maharaj to guide you how to please Prabhupada and remain in the shade of his lotus feet. And in that way, we will be protected. Protected from the onslaughts of the illusory energy. Protected from again taking birth in this material world. And we will also attain the shade of the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath, which is where we all belong. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Srila Prabhupada in Allahabad, because just now the Kumbh Mela is going on, and Krishna Chandra Prabhu, before I came, he sent one really nice synopsis of this incredible journey that the 950 devotees from this area took at Kumbh Mela, or to the Kumbh Mela this year, and the places that you visited with Srila Radhanath Maharaj. So it might be nice to go back into time if we all took a journey just in memory of Srila Prabhupada at that time and place, just exactly this time. In the year 1971, so everybody could kind of think of where they were in 1971. Some of you might not have been born yet, so that's a little hard to recall. For those of you that were here, you might have even heard news of Srila Prabhupada's activities at that time. And certainly some of you have read a little sketch of that time in the biography. But that was a very exciting time, because sometimes devotees reflect when they're with the spiritual master and he takes them some transcendental place on some transcendental pilgrimage, you know, how to appreciate that to the deepest, to the fullest that they can. But at that time, imagine that you really didn't have any idea what Kumbh Mela was. And no one had ever imagined that you'd never even conceived of the concept of millions and millions of persons who are going to a place for purification. So just as I'm sure it was now, it was then on a smaller scale, because there were only about 7 million persons that came to that Magh Mela. Now there's purported maybe 30 million that are going. But I remember that I was so struck with the cacophony of transcendental sound vibrations that was in the ether. Was it the same that there were many megaphone systems? Just every camp has a megaphone system. And nobody knows, you know, that there's a regulator on it. They just turn it up to high. And so similarly, out of our camp, you know, we had turned on high. And Srila Prabhupada had, of course, the 24-hour kirtan going on. And one of the strongest aspects of that attendance was to distribute prasadam from our camp. But Srila Prabhupada also, we stayed there for over almost 3 weeks, camped out. And one of the really thrilling aspects of, I think for me, the most thrilling aspect was that Srila Prabhupada was lecturing for one of the first times on the sixth canto, first volume, a Jamil story. So this was presented in such a riveting way that, just like in the telly or the television, they'll have a series of dramas that are shown every week, and some people will just become mad after the next installment, what's going to happen to this person and what this person did. The storyline is so captivating. Well, Srila Prabhupada presented this Ajamil story in such a powerfully captivating way that just as you show tremendous enthusiasm and love to render the lotus feet of Radha Gopinath, or in Radha Govinda temple in Jaipur, the devotees, they just, when the gate is opened, everybody thunders and runs as fast as they can to get to the lotus feet of Radha Govindaji. Well, that's the way it was when the morning program came, time for Bhagavatam class. Everybody was just so enthusiastic to hear, oh, what was Srila Prabhupada going to reveal today? So that kind of intense hearing, when we engage in that really intense hearing that's delivered by the realized, self-realized soul, then there's tremendous benefit. We taste the mercy of the spiritual master through that venue. So at any rate, there was maybe one little electric light bulb or two on the stage platform. And the Archaviguraha at that time was Sushirada Madhava, who are now in Mayapur Dham as the small Archaviguraha. They're about 17 inches high. And so Srila Prabhupada it was really wonderful to watch him, how he would do the same things that he did in Kumbh Mela, that he did in Calcutta, that he did in Bombay, that he did in Madras, that he did in New Zealand or New York City. Same formula every day, no matter where it was, to try to deliver to his disciples, especially those people that came to listen, spiritual subject matter. But in a holy place of pilgrimage, which all of our temples are pilgrimage sites because of the presence of their lordship. But in a place like this, everything is magnified a little bit, same in the holy dhams of Vrindavan and Mayapur and Jagannath Puri. So I remember, I'll just tell one little story at that was very emotional and instructive. So I was one of those devotees that was so hungry to hear Srila Prabhupada. And we all used to have, like, this devotee in front of me as a notebook. We all had notebooks. It wasn't the high-tech years of the videos and tape recorder batteries were difficult. So we all wrote down everything at speed. Almost every member had a notebook. So they'd listen, but then they'd write down what they heard, and then afterwards we'd discuss what we thought we heard or what we got in the notes, like this. So I was only there 3 mornings. And at that time, I hadn't experienced with so much of the etiquette that's practiced in India, because in the very early days of this Krishna consciousness movement, there was Srila Prabhupada, there was complete access to him. Whoever was around him, it meant that they really wanted to be around him. It wasn't that the etiquette was there so much, just like, now they're so beautiful that the brahmacharis are sitting next to Maharaj, and there's a powerful brahmachari force, there's a powerful sannyas force, there's a powerful grihastha force. But at that time, we were all just like little toddlers. We weren't devotees maybe 3-4 years. So we were all Srila Prabhupada's young disciples. And I don't know, from the beginning of meeting him, I was like glue. Whenever Srila Prabhupada was, I was right behind him, somehow close, right with whoever else wanted that. So he allowed that. And so it was on the Pandal event was there, and this god sister of mine, Kaushalya, and I, we used to get up at 1:30 in the morning and then walk to the boats. In those days, they had boats to go out bathing, and we got in a boat and we went out to take our bath, and then we chanted Isopanishads underwater and Gayatri, and then come back and then do the morning program. So we were all surcharged to come to the morning program. And so there's this one morning where, you know, how Srila Prabhupada instituted within ISKCON that every morning he would chant the Guru Vashtikam prayers, Sangsara prayers. So this one very unique morning, it was about the third day into the Kumbh Mela, he sat down and he picked up his kartals and he He didn't start with samsara. He started with, the prayers to the six Goswamis. So he sang the first verse, and then he kind of opened his eyes for devotees to follow, and nobody knew that prayer except for me. And so we didn't have songbooks even in those days. So I just listened on a tape, and so I started to sing with him. And so the two of us sang this whole prayer responsively back and forth. And I remember, you know, that intensity of that moment, that here was this roar of spiritual vibration, and then in the center of it, it was this little sound, you know, two little microphones, and Srila Prabhupada chanting this incredible, beautiful prayer, and I was. And then after that, he chanted Hare Krishna, and so there was a profound effect on me. And so after the morning program, when I did my laundry, was washing my sari and hanging it on a shamayana. We had two saris, and one I was hanging over the shamayana, and Prabhupada saw the bottom of that sari. Did my laundry, was washing my sari and hanging it on a shamayana. We had two saris, and one I was hanging over the shamayana, and Prabhupada saw the bottom of that sari, and he saw it was the pattern, evidently, of my sari. And so he said, "Oh, Jamuna, come here." So I came in and I paid my obeisances, and before I even got up from paying my obeisances, he said, "So you don't want to hear anymore?" And so I immediately, you know, just began to cry. I said, I want to hear more than anything, Srila Prabhupada. He said, "So why aren't you sitting this was a day after that. And I said, "Well, after that kirtan yesterday, one of our sannyasi godbrothers, he approached me and he told me that it wasn't proper that I should be chanting alone with you, and it wasn't even proper that I should be sitting where I was sitting, so I should sit over on the other side." He said, "Have you noticed all the other ladies? They're sitting over there, so why can't you do that?" So I said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know, and I'll go sit there." So I did that, and then, so I explained that to Srila Prabhupada, and he said something very nice. He said, "So, I am speaking this for those who want to hear. I am speaking this for those that want to hear." And I had already expressed my intensity for that. So then I asked him a question. I said, "Srila Prabhupada, when you were in the presence of your Guru Maharaj, how much time did you actually spend with him?" And that's when he gave the words, "Not very much time, maybe 5 or 6 times, but he used to walk and talk with me so many things." So I'm giving this story so those of you that maybe are traveling or living a little far away from the temple, maybe you can only come to visit on Sunday, or maybe not even that much, or maybe you're out doing some service on behalf of your Guru Maharaj, that there'll be those times when you can't have his association physically. But now you have to prepare. Your Guru Maharaj is still on the planet for that inevitability of the time that will come when he's no longer with you. So we all have to deal with this Vapu and Vani presence of the spiritual master, and we all have to search for the mercy of the spiritual master in both those conditions. Because while they're non-different, there is a perception of difference. Because sometimes we feel more strongly the spiritual strength of the spiritual master when in person. That contact is palpable, so that you can feel it in your heart. But really the hearing is what's so important. So then he said that statement. And then he said, those that think that association with a spiritual master, physical association with a spiritual master is the only kind, they're no better than mosquitoes sitting on the lap of the king. And he said, what is the business of the mosquito? It is simply to suck blood. And he said, some of my godbrothers, they were big sannyasis. He said, and they thought like that to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj. He said, but that can all be just sucking blood. So this is again very instructive that this is not the only kind of association. Of course, one is awarded by some inconceivable mercy, the physical presence and the chastisement and the praise of the spiritual master. But sometimes most often we have to sustain ourselves without that. And certainly after the departure of the spiritual master, every faithful devotee must deeply search deeper every day for exploring the mercy of the spiritual master and separation. He reasons ill. How does that go, Vishakha?
He reasons ill who says that Vaishnava...
He reasons ill who says that...
Who says that Vaishnavas die when thou art still
living in sound.
For Vaishnavas die to live, and living
spread the holy name all around. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's words. So that's what we will all be inevitably left with at some time with our spiritual master. So it's always really good to meditate again on those times where we have the physical presence of our Guru Maharaj, and then to call on those. There was one time Prabhupada initiated another lady called Vishakha in 1969. She left. But I remember I was present at John Lennon's when she and her husband to Hamburg to open a temple. And you know, sometimes the spiritual master, he can see through you. You've had experience with your Guru Maharaj that when he looks at you, he's seeing much more than you see of yourself. Have you had that experience? So that was also with Srila Prabhupada. And I saw when he looked at that lady, he could see that she was going to have some struggle in front of her. And he said this, which is of course the bottom line. He said, so chant Hare Krishna. Even if you are in the wilderness, he said, instead of wilderness, he said, wilderness of illusion, chant Hare Krishna, chant Hare Krishna, chant Hare Krishna. So again, to obtain the mercy of the spiritual master, that vehicle of chanting the holy name, very sincerely, very faithfully, with as much depth as we can, minimum 16 rounds, is so important again for obtaining the mercy. Because we see so many, sometimes we see so many Vaishnavas that say, oh, I am my guru's man. My godbrothers or godsisters, I am Srila Prabhupada's man. But we have to certainly prove that by our behavior in terms of faithfulness to the holy name, to chanting the holy name with depth and feeling and by continually hearing, his instructions through his books, discussing those. At all times when you get together, you can pick a paragraph from some book and a god sister or a god brother and just sit with one paragraph and spend 2 hours. How can I do this? You know, where am I at with this instruction? How much progress did I make last year with this instruction? What would I like to change in my behavior or character will help me to understand more deeply this instruction. If I don't do this, where will I be next year or the year after? So always take stock of how we are in relationship to obtaining the mercy of the spiritual master by following his instructions. So this Kumbh Mela experience with Srila Prabhupada was mostly through the hearing and through the prasad distribution. I don't even think he took a bath in the Tribeni. But we all felt as if we were, you know, taking a bath through his association in that holy place. Would you like to speak a little bit about Prabhupada in Bombay? That's your recollections, Vishakha?
Bombay? Well, this is actually one thing that comes to mind, is that how Prabhupada and his devotees encouraged newcomers. I could relate perhaps one story in that regard. This actually is not Bombay, but Calcutta, in the summer of 1971, that my husband-to-be and I were staying in Calcutta at that time. We were not yet initiated. And the conditions were rather difficult, that the devotees in the temple were having trouble with their health. They were having trouble getting along with each other. The men and the women had some tension between each other. Management was not up to the proper standard. It was a very difficult situation to be in. And I was brand new, and every day I would think, why am I here? Maybe I should be somewhere else. But the devotees kept me there by saying repeatedly, oh, don't leave. Srila Prabhupada is coming. Srila Prabhupada is coming. You can't leave now. So I hung on by a very thin thread until October, when Srila Prabhupada came to Calcutta. At that time, there were, as I recall, just three women living in the temple. There was my dear god sister, Yamuna Devi, and Kaushalya, and Chitralekha. And then I also had just moved in. So the situation was, the women lived upstairs, and to get to the temple room, you had to go down the stairs and through the shower room, through the office, and then to the temple. And these women were so dedicated and sincere, they would wake up at 2:30 in the morning, take their bath before all the men, and go to the temple room and chant all their rounds before Mangal Arati, right? So since I had become one of these women, they expected me to get up as well. And 2:30 in the morning was like I hadn't even slept. It was like I hadn't closed my eyes. But they woke me up, and at that point I hadn't put a sari on properly. I had an extra sari, and in Calcutta at that time it was so hot, it was a clean sari, but it hadn't been hung out to dry. It had dried in a round kind of sphere. And when they opened it up, it was unlimited wrinkles. Every inch had many wrinkles. But they wrapped me up in this sari. And sometime later, I could very much relate to the verse in Bhagavad Gita where it says, there is no beginning, there is no middle, there is no end to all this. That's just how I felt about the sari. So I think that I forgot to do anything with my hair. I left it as it was. And I stumbled down these stairs and stumbled through the shower room. And then the men slept in the office, and there was one candle, so I had to pick my way through the sleeping devotees to try to get to the temple room. And just a step or two before I was about to enter the temple room, I was stopped. I was stopped by a devotee who looked at me in the eyes with all sincerity and said, if you put some tilak on, you'll look even more beautiful. So I thought, either this person has sincerity, which I have not come close to, which I can't even relate to, or else this person is entirely cynical. And actually, it was the first, and that person was my dear god sister, Yamuna Devi Dasi. So I managed to, between sleeping and waking, I spent some time in the temple room attempting to chant the holy name of Krishna, and then there was Mangal Arati and the whole morning program. And after the prasadam, I somehow entered Srila Prabhupada's room And this was the first time he had seen me in a sari. Now, we must remember that sari has unlimited wrinkles. I still had not done my hair, although I did have tilak on. So Srila Prabhupada looked at me, now the first time in a sari, and he says, "Oh, you are looking so nice in sari." So it is now 30 years later, and just these few sentences I am remembering from Prabhupada and from his dear disciples, because they encourage. Again, is looking past all the trash and seeing something good and fanning that minuscule spark in the hopes that it will become the flame that it is meant to be. So we can try to do that with each other, and even with ourselves we should avoid being too harsh and try to see that we are attempting to be sincere, we are attempting to follow our spiritual master. So encourage each other and encourage ourselves, and in that way together make rapid spiritual progress.
I think we've probably taken a lot of your time up already. My goodness. Well, there's one way that for a long time I've looked at Srila Prabhupada's presence with us and paralleled it somewhat to the mood and temperament of the Adi-lila, Madhya-lila, and Anti-lila of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. That in 1966, June ISKCON was founded. By Janmashtami of the first year of 66, Srila Prabhupada had 12 disciples, 11 men and one woman. That woman was my younger sister, Janki, first initiated. And then San Francisco Temple and Seattle and handful of temples. And the mood that was created in these early years that I liken from 1966 to 1969 was one of a family. So when we're studying Srila Prabhupada's example, that means more along the Lilamrita lines, we have Srila Prabhupada's instruction is Siddhanta, and the purports of the translations and Krishna book. That's one way to know Srila Prabhupada. And another way is to take a bath in the character and the quality and the pastimes and the entourage of Srila Prabhupada as he was engaged in his preaching mission. So in my eyes, you know, in the CC, we find that up until 1 through 24 years, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in Mayapur and is the youth period, and the family members, the mother and all the associates. So that those first 3 years of ISKCON from 66 through 69 was a family, the family stages of ISKCON. And, you know, it's very exciting for us now that Srila Prabhupada's gone to appreciate each one of these different periods of Srila Prabhupada's presence with us, neither more or less. For example, the later years aren't necessarily more important, as in the CC, the Antya-lila isn't necessarily more important, although completely different subject matter and mood in Lord Chaitanya's Antya-lila than Adi-lila, but they're all absolutely important. So, that early period of Srila Prabhupada's establishment of the family of ISKCON is very exciting for us as an example, because we are all a family. I'm a new family member, but when I come here and I have your association, I feel immediately, oh, These are my family members. I may not have even met them yet, but even in 24 hours, I've been here 24 hours, and I'm just flooded with this wonderful presence of new family members that I feel like I've known you all for so long as well. And Srila Prabhupada had that ability that the minute he met you, he would reciprocate on such a deep level that it was unusually important. There was so much impact in meeting him for just the first time. To have one conversation with Srila Prabhupada, or to spend one afternoon with him, was such a profound experience. And then we began to have this kind of exchange with each other, with Srila Prabhupada in the center, whether he was physically or not. So whenever we have a community, and this temple is getting, I see the growth here will be so much that even with the hall downstairs, it is going to be overflowing at the seams. This is such a powerful preaching center that you'll hardly be able to contain the activities in the space that you're expanding to because of the atmosphere that's created here. But Srila Prabhupada was always available to teach us by his example, and we looked at each other as we were trained to look at each other mostly as Prabhu's master. This is my master, whether it was God brother or God sister. And Srila Prabhupada was the father. He was, of course, called Swamiji in those days. And then the next period of looking at Srila Prabhupada's presence, so this was the Madhya period, and that began in 1970, and in the later part of the year when he flew to Kolkata via Tokyo with a group of devotees and sent another group of devotees to Bombay. They arrived October 4th, 1970 and stayed at One Life members Kailash Seksaria's on Marine Drive. And that was the inauguration of the second phase, the Madhya period, as Lord Chaitanya traveled and left Navadvip side and began traveling, and he inundated so many people with the love of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada came, and from that arrival in Bombay, for many, many weeks and months, he traveled on the train or in cars with a handful of devotees, usually under 20. And as there were no established pieces of land, we were invited to accompany Srila Prabhupada to various pandal programs, and we used to call it the pandal circuit, because interestingly enough, there are some sadhus that just travel year-round to these different pandals and preach. And so we got to know many of those other transcendentalists, many impersonalists and Mayavadis on that circuit as well. And but nonetheless, that was the venue that Srila Prabhupada, that Krishna arranged for Srila Prabhupada, and he accepted. And that was a wonderful training ground, because we as innocent disciples sometimes have no idea what is a Mayavadi or what is Krishna consciousness. And when we are able to be around such people in the presence of our spiritual master, as you have the opportunity to do this with Radhanath Maharaj, it's very instructive. So we can begin to discern what to do and what not to do, how to develop our intelligence, the power to analyze things in proper perspective. So in that way, we traveled with Srila Prabhupada around India for till 1972, and then in 1972, the cornerstone was laid for Mayapur and Vrindavan, and Srila Prabhupada started to establish temple programs. And then really the next change into the Antya period was 1975. There was a as you study the history of Srila Prabhupada's presence with us, that was a tremendous turning point. He while not physically, in many ways began to try to turn over the serious responsibility of managing very important projects to his chief whips or to his disciples, that he tried to entrust them with that responsibility. And yet, of course, when they weren't capable, he would try to step in and rectify things, readjust personnel. But at that point, he, as Lord Chaitanya then settled in Sridham Jagannath Puri and went into another phase of his transcendental leela, Srila Prabhupada indirectly began preparing us for his departure. That was very much intensified. The traveling went on through 1976, but in 1977, then Prabhupada was becoming more indisposed, and you know the history of Bhubaneswar in January, February, then going to, what is that, where Yadavara was in that Ganga site? Where is Ananda Ganga? Rishikesh, yeah. And then on to Vrindavan. So in that way, Srila Prabhupada began to exhibit much more of the last stage of sannyas, going from Parivrajakacharya sannyas preacher platform to much more Paramahansa mode of sannyas, and that's so glorious. So I think I'm maybe speaking this breakdown because in trying to understand how to obtain Srila Prabhupada's mercy, whether you're a Srila Prabhupada disciple or not, at least for many of you, you're so fortunate that Srila Prabhupada is your param guru. And he said that the param guru is sometimes more merciful in certain ways, or at least more lenient than the spiritual master. So you can all pray to Srila Prabhupada for his mercy to serve your guru nicely, as we are doing with Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. He's very accessible and very present there and just waiting for us to have those kind of prayers. Never doubt for one instant that we can't all be recipients of this mercy and separation from Prabhupada, because we absolutely can. And it's one way to get access in that is really studying how Srila Prabhupada interfaced with his disciples and the moods that were created, and hear pastimes of how different of the 26 qualities of a pure devotee were manifested through Srila Prabhupada in these different phases of his presence with us. And India is an exceptionally rich area because the culture of Vaishnavism is, well, he said it wasn't necessarily strong in Bombay in the early days, but nonetheless now it's such a fixture that this Vaishnav, just exactly the way Prabhupada presented it, you know. As I was speaking the first day, I got to hear Chai. Prabhu, is your Chai, Prabhu? Is your name Chai? He was speaking, he was reading, I think, from Bhagavad Gita, and speaking so nicely, as he'd realized from Srila Prabhupada. And I find that here especially, that while there's some individual expression, there's really a richness of realization in Prabhupada's senior disciples. So we can all take advantage of each other's association as family members. That's such a powerful concept. And as we show that, the power of that family expanding, then that's such an attractive feature. Srila Prabhupada was dealing with very small programs in the beginning, but this is now so immense. And the way it's been structured to help facilitate real sadhu satsanga, real personal growth, real exploration of obtaining the mercy of the spiritual master, that's really exemplary here in Chaupati. So really fortunate to be here and just as I'm experiencing here, then I'll take that back to where I am and let them taste it through hearing stories of how you have done that, because you're so nicely drinking in the mercy of Srila Prabhupada by your behavior and your activities. Vishakha Prabhu?
Well, we can explore Srila Prabhupada's mercy in so many ways. One thing that I learned fairly recently, there's a letter that Srila Prabhupada wrote to one of his godbrothers, that in the mid-70s, one of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers in Vrindavan wrote to Srila Prabhupada asking for some donation for a preaching project that this godbrother was going to do. And he knew, of course, Srila Prabhupada had tremendous success and so much money was coming, so he was asking for some 50,000 rupees for some project, preaching project that he was doing on behalf of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So Prabhupada, in his own way, could be very cutting and to the point. And when he replied to this godbrother, he said, "Yes, it is very nice you're asking money for this preaching project. However, I have seen that when my disciples were in Vrindavan and you went to take prasadam, that they had gone to his math and he had given them prasadam." So Prabhupada was writing, "I have noted that you would not take prasadam with my Malechva disciples." This godbrother was a Pukka Brahmin, and of course it's improper for a Pukka Brahmin to eat with Malechvas. So based on that, this godbrother would not eat with Srila Prabhupada's disciples. So in his letter in response, Srila Prabhupada said, "Just as you did not want to sully your brahminical status by respecting prasadam with my disciples who are former Malechvas," this is true, "so I do not want to sully your brahminical status by giving you their Malechva money." So in a way it's very cutting, and it's also very educational for us. Because if we look back to Prabhupada's history, on the one hand we can say that yes, so many of us were Malechvas, there's no doubt. But nonetheless, we did take proper diksha from Srila Prabhupada. We are trying to follow the four rules and regulations. We are chanting Hare Krishna daily, 16 rounds. So in that way, being touched by the pure devotee, that Malechva status is no longer applicable. So therefore, one should see beyond this bodily designation, and Vaishnavas take prasadam together, whatever their background may be. Yet if we roll back to 65, 66, when Prabhupada again, talking about the very first days when Prabhupada arrived on the Lower East Side, people were coming, they were attracted to hear from him. And in fact, Prabhupada did not take prasadam with them, but for a very different reason. Because after cooking for these Malechvas, Prabhupada with his own hand would serve these Malechvas. And there was no excuse that they had taken diksha. There was no diksha. They were not following. But simply out of a desire to serve his spiritual master, to fulfill the order that his spiritual master had given him, he was serving with his own hands this person on the highest platform. The highest Vaishnava was serving the very lowest to fulfill the order of his spiritual master. This is the mercy of Srila Prabhupada.
Ijai. Okay. Well, this is one nice story. Vishakha was speaking about Calcutta temple. So this may not be close to home for you, because you now have the benefit of being in Chaupati temple. But maybe someday you will meet somebody who isn't in Chaupati temple. And maybe they're struggling very hard in their temple. That maybe the atmosphere in the temple, the deities are present, even the spiritual master is present. But for some horrible reason, devotees are not getting along. That devotees even are feeling isolated and they're right in the temple. The devotees are going through the movements of sadhana and bhakti yoga, but they're not feeling the benefits of that. So it may be sometime that you'll meet somebody like that. And this is what happened in, that was 70, that was 71 after the, no, that was 71, before the cornerstone laying ceremony in Mayapur. And I remember sometimes sitting with, I had a really close brahmachari friend, Giriraj Brahmachari, and we used to have very philosophical discussions with other, about this subject matter. Why are the devotees so unhappy? And so finally one day, Srila Prabhupada called all the devotees for a meeting in his room. So Vishakha Prabhu was present, so she may, you know, please interject as you recall. I know if I miss something, because I'm certain I'll miss so much. But he said, "Will everybody come into the room?" So we went into the room, which is now Audrey Darren's office, which was Srila Prabhupada's room at that time and bedroom. And the doors were open to the veranda that overlooked the lake and 3 Albert Road. Around about 5 o'clock in the afternoon or early evening. And so we all came in his room, and he looked around to his family members, and he saw one lady was missing. So he said, where is Haimavati, was her name, where is Haimavati? And one brahmachari said in a rather cavalier manner, she's not here, more or less she's mentally somewhere else. So Prabhupada looked over very sternly at him and said, go find her. And he said, but Srila Prabhupada, I'm a brahmachari. And he said, go find her. And he was very hesitant to do that, but since he had said this, Prabhupada made him go. So we had to sit there, we were all chanting our japa and waiting for Haimavati to come back with his brahmachari Prabhu. And when she came, he did something interesting. He went around the room to each person, and he had them speak their grievance. Had them reveal in from their understanding, difficult as it might have been, what was the problem? What was causing the problem? So in front of the spiritual master, that's not such an easy thing to do, because it shows where the consciousness is at. You can't hide. No hiding from that. So that was uncomfortable, and nobody wanted to, but he asked. Because Srila Prabhupada was very, oftentimes, he might have known many things, but he would ask a disciple a question so they could give a report, and Srila Prabhupada could understand in 3 or 4 sentences, or even if it was a short report or a long report, he could understand the mind so much of the disciple. So first he had them do that. And then he had them, then he sat for some time, and he did one other thing, but I'm not positive. Didn't he say, if you don't change, what will happen? Didn't he make us think like that?
I don't remember.
Well, that's what I recall. And then he said, he was quiet for a moment, and then he said, do you think it was easy for me to go to the Western world? He said, when I was in Pennsylvania, he said that I was he didn't say it was Sally Agarwal's, but we presume he was. He said there was a refrigerator. And he said in one drawer in the bottom, he said, I kept my vegetables. And he said in one other drawer in the bottom, there was meat. He said, do you think that was easy for me? That never in my whole life. Did I think I would have to do that? So, he said, do you think that was easy? And in that way, he told various things that had been difficult for him. And he said, you're all here because I tolerated that. So, it made us think very, very deeply that tolerance is absolutely required in our spiritual life. There'll be so many circumstances when, even amongst us, we have to tolerate unkindness. We know that we want to have a loving, kind family. We want to live by Vaishnava standards where compassion is an accepted thing. Respect is an accepted thing. Honoring another devotee is the norm. We want that. But sometimes, for some reason or another, bad habits come in from the past, and that isn't automatic behavior. And then there's a labyrinth of confusion and chaos that ensues. So Srila Prabhupada wanted to let us know that he saw that. But he couldn't change that. Only we could change that. And he tried to allow us to see that by evaluating how we treated each other, how we saw the problems, so we could correct that. And the impetus was, do you think it was easy for me? That's another manifestation of his mercy. That we couldn't be here today. We couldn't be here taking a bath in respecting each other, in wanting each other's association, in wanting to serve each other. Where we're staying now, this Krishna Chandra Prabhu and his wife Radha Priya, this is so exemplary, this behavior, because I can remember also in Calcutta, Prabhupada used to ask some of his disciples, when people come visiting to Calcutta temple, you make them feel so welcome. You make them feel take care of all their needs, so they'll feel very enlivened in their spiritual life. He said, my disciples, they give gallons of blood in my service. So when they come here, you make them feel refreshed. So Vaishnava hospitality is like that. And this example of these two Prabhus, I don't want to embarrass them, but they're so nicely, exemplary behavior in this respect. And I can think how, that must please Srila Prabhupada so much. So the more we strive for this again, the more we engage in these loving exchanges that are mentioned in Nectar of Instruction, these six loving exchanges, so offering prasadam and receiving prasadam, offering gifts and receiving gifts, speaking one's mind in Krishna consciousness, hearing one's mind in Krishna consciousness, the more we do this, of course with Vaishnava etiquette in place, then all the wealth is so tremendous for receiving the mercy of the spiritual master. Because then we know we're trying to please the spiritual master. That's one other concept. There's so many little individual concepts that can use Srila Prabhupada's example for contemplating on how to get those benedicting rays of the lotus feet of the spiritual master. We can pray for that.
Let us offer our gratitude to these illustrious Matis by loudly chanting Hari Bol.
Hari Bol! Hari Bol! Hari Bol!
I would like to share with all of you a very sacred lesson that I learned from Jamuna Mataji many years ago. She will not remember this, but it is engraved very deeply in my heart. I have spoken at times of my search for truth through Europe, the Middle East, to the Himalayas. En route, I passed through Bombay, and there, by Krishna's mercy, I met the devotees on the first day of the first major Pandal program that the devotees held at Cross Maidan. That was, I believe, in March of 1971. I was sitting way, way in the back amongst about 20,000 people. I explained when I first came in, Jamuna Mataji was singing beautiful bhajans for several hours, if I remember. Her husband, Guru Das, was the person who came way, way to the back of the audience and took me by the hand and said, Prabhupada wants you to sit beside him on the stage. And I asked, how does Prabhupada know me? And he did not answer my question. He just pulled me and took me on the stage. When I climbed on the stage, I really felt like a wretched crow in a flock of beautiful, pure swans, because everyone was clean with tilak and shaved heads and bright dhotis. And I only had one dhoti and chador that I had worn for months and months and months. I would wash it in dirty rivers and put it back on to dry. I hadn't combed my hair or shaved in a couple of years. I was like a sadhu. I had a little stick, which was just an uprooted branch from a tree, little begging pot. And I was on stage with all these Hare Krishna Vaishnavas. They were dancing and singing. And I was thinking, this dancing is not for yogi. But then he would take us on parikrama to Barasana, Nandagaon, Govardhan, Daoji, Gokul Mahavan, Radha Damodar in the six temples. He would personally take us to these places and tell us about each place. It was such a deeply enriching experience to be with Prabhupada in Vrindavan. I've had many dreams over the years of Prabhupada taking us in Vrindavan, revealing Vrindavan to us. It was, and then in the afternoon he would give darshan, and I would sit close to him. I never spoke anything, I was too shy, but I would just sit and watch and listen. But it was at that time that I accepted Prabhupada as my guru in my heart. That his compassion, his knowledge, his love was unparalleled in my observation of anyone I had ever met in any religion, in any part of the world. So I surrendered my heart. The devotees wanted to take me with Prabhupada. They were traveling. But I said, I will never leave Vrindavan. So the devotees left. They even offered me the position of his personal servant, because they said his servant was always getting sick
because India was such a hard place. But you seem to know how to live in India quite well. But I said, no, when Prabhupada comes back and starts a temple, I will help him then. But I will stay in Vrindavan. So the devotees started calling me a sahajya. But Prabhupada rubbed me on the head and said, this is very good that you love Vrindavan. It gave me all encouragement. It was during that time that I happened to have the great fortune of being purified by witnessing the auspicious marriage of Vishakha Mataji and Yadubar Prabhu. And they still remain, over all these years, so faithfully together in Prabhupada's service. So I stayed for some months after this, but due to visa problems, I had to leave. And the people of Vrindavan told me that if you have to leave India, there's a place that's just like Barsana. You should go there. It's called Mithila or Janakpur. It's in Nepal. So I left and went to Mithila. Today it's called Janakpur. And there I read Ramayana of Valmiki and Tulsidas. I was just immersed in studying Ram's Leela. And Ram Navami came. Then I went to the Himalayas in Nepal. And then I got a 2-week transit visa in India. So I first went to Prayag, where I bathed in the Triveni, Jamuna, Ganga, Saraswati. Then I went back to Ayodhya, and then I came back to Vrindavan. During that time in Vrindavan, I met all my Vrijavasi friends, but I went to Radha Damodar Temple. When I was there, I found that Jamuna Prabhu and Gurudas Prabhu were living in an upstairs room of the Radha Damodar Temple. It was the first time I ever saw ISKCON devotees living in Vrindavan. I think they were the first. So I visited them one day. And they very graciously welcomed me. They remembered me, and they felt sorry for me. And she was very motherly, and he was very fatherly. But there's something I witnessed that had a deep impression in my heart. Because from the time I accepted Srila Prabhupada as my spiritual master in my heart, the relationship was that I was worshipping Radha and Krishna. I was chanting the holy names. I was following all the principles. I was reading his books. I was trying to intensely remember Krishna and pray to Krishna. And my conception was that all this is by the mercy of my guru, Srila Prabhupada, and all this is, whatever I do, should be an offering to my guru. But I never had the conception of actual, practical, day-to-day service. But when I met them, I was with them for several hours. And they were, that whole several hours, they were constantly talking between themselves of what Prabhupada wants them to do. Even the littlest things, Prabhupada wants it done like this. Prabhupada wants us to do like this. That was all that was coming out of their mouths and in their exchange with each other, is what Prabhupada wanted them to do and what they must do and what they will do and what they have done. And I can tell you the truth, at first I felt uncomfortable by that, because such surrender to the spiritual master in a practical, day-to-day, moment-by-moment spirit of service, I had never experienced anywhere before, in any mat, in any cave, in any ashram, any guru. And I was thinking to myself, by seeing them, that this is what a disciple actually is. Someone who at every moment is just thinking and discussing how to assist the spiritual master in his mission. The idea of direct, personal, personalized service I first experienced in Jamuna Devi and Guru Das. And that had a very large impact in my heart. I began to question, Prabhupada's my guru, and I'm trying to surrender to Krishna, but what am I actually doing for him and his mission? These people are doing something at every moment. It was astounding to me. Their every thought, their every word, their every action was simply to do what Prabhupada wanted them to do in Vrindavan. I'm sure Jamuna does not remember this, but it's a very sacred part of my life. I only spent a few hours with them that day, but what I received, I carry with me even 29 years later. My last day in Vrindavan, before my visa expired, I performed the Govardhan Parikrama and then had to proceed to the Western world. And some of my dear Brijabasi, Babaji and Pujari friends told me, you should go to New Vrindavan, because Swami Maharaj has said that it's none different than Vrindavan. So Jamuna Mataji, Vishakha Mataji, Tridas Prabhu, Chandramali Maharaj, these devotees embody lifetime commitment of service to the mission of their spiritual master. And for this, I pray that my head may eternally be bowed very low at their lotus feet. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Now we will have kirtan.